Welcome to episode 139 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for November 15th, 2009. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, thank you for a recent award, another settlement in the case of the Santa Clara deputy who fell asleep and killed two cyclists, a product recall, Dave Scott suing over a bike versus car accident, and a skeptical mechanic nabs a thief. Following the news, the announcement of our 2010 Fredcast Tour of the French Alps and a special surprise, plus a review of Race Across the Sky, asking you about Thanksgiving rides, two product reviews, and PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. Great to be back here with you. And by the way, if I sound a little bit strange, it's because, once again, I'm off on another business trip for the day job. Today's episode of the Fredcast coming to you from the eastern shore of Maryland, where I've just had a great crab cake and I'm ready to get started talking about today's show. But before we get into today's news, I do want to mention that today's episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Audible. Go to audiblepodcast.com/cycling to sign up for your free 14-day listener gold trial of Audible. I love Audible. Can't wait every month to get my free credit and get yet another book. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But first, I also want to say that today's episode of the Fredcast, as all episodes of the Fredcast, are also brought to you by you, or at least listeners like you, who have found that they love the Fredcast enough to throw a couple of bucks into the kitty by clicking that donate link on www.thefredcast.com, by doing a one-time donation, or by subscribing to the Fredcast. There are a lot of costs associated with the show. And again, as I said in the last episode, I hate to get all NPR-y on you, but there are a lot of costs associated, and we do appreciate your support. So please go ahead and click that donate now link button on www.thefredcast.com. Be generous. We appreciate your support. And now, let's get into the news for episode 139 of the Fredcast. Well, I don't know how I could lead the news off with anything but this. I have to say thank you. Thank you, double underscore in bold, you, for the honor that was bestowed upon me on November the 6th. I went to the Utah Social Media Awards, which was billed as the first event of its kind ever held anywhere in the whole world, an awards ceremony just for social media. And I have to tell you, it was so amazing. They went through a lot of awards, best blog, including our friend Eldon Nelson from Fat Cyclist, who was one of the recipients of that award. They went through best use of Twitter and best total social media campaign. And when they were all done, they'd passed all the awards and we had heard from everybody. They said, well, wait, there's two more awards left. And the first one, they said, was the People's Choice Award. And this was given to the social media entity that had the most votes of anyone in all of the nomination process for the first annual Utah Social Media Awards. And they started to describe the site and they started to describe what it was all about. And I just started to shake my head. I was so shocked and humbled to find out that I was the honoree for the 2009 People's Choice Award at the Utah Social Media Awards. I literally stood up in front of the crowd. They handed me a microphone. I had no idea what to say. I was really flattered just to know that all of you had taken the time to vote for me for this award. It was really, really fantastic. I've gotten a bit of press as a result, including a wonderful article in my hometown newspaper in Park City, the Park Record, just talked about podcasting in general as a business and what goes into producing a podcast. I've put that already onto thefredcast.com. Go ahead and check it out. But I just wanted to say one more time to all of you, because you all weren't at the dinner, thank you. You really made my evening. You made my year. It made the late nights, the sitting in a hotel room as I am now on a business trip, taking the time to do this, it really helps make it all worthwhile. So thank you for bestowing that honor upon me. Very much appreciated. Among the stories we've talked about the most here on the Fredcast are, number one, the story of the doctor in Los Angeles that we talked about last week, who's now facing 10 years in prison for his conviction of road raging against a couple of cyclists. And the second, the case of Deputy James Counsell in Santa Clara County, California, who caused the deaths of Christy Goff and Matt Peterson when Deputy Counsell seemingly fell asleep while driving his police cruiser on March 9th, 2008. There has been yet another settlement in that case, and all told, this case has cost Santa Clara County $4.3 million. The county is now paying $800,000 to the father of a cyclist killed by that deputy who fell asleep behind the wheel of his cruiser, on top of $3.5 million in previous settlements. The settlement last week was the third in the ongoing legal fight. Last month, the county agreed to pay Goff's mother $1.2 million, and in July, the county settled with Peterson's family for $2.3 million. The family of the injured cyclist, the one who was not killed, Christopher Knapp, also sued the county, and that suit is pending. According to reports, it's alleged that Deputy Counsell was 4.5 hours into his 12-hour shift when he nodded off behind the wheel, and he had worked more than 12 hours the day before. And as you'll recall, Deputy Counsell pleaded guilty to 2 counts of misdemeanor vehicular manslaughter and was sentenced to 4 months in jail and 800 hours of community service. He was also demoted to an unsworn position as a sheriff's technician and is not allowed to drive a patrol car or carry a gun, but he will probably carry out his jail term in a home detention or by taking part in the sheriff's work furlough program. There's no doubt that overtime costs counties a lot of money. This one cost the county $4.3 million for just 4 extra hours of overtime and the lives of 2 cyclists. Got a product recall for you, so go ahead and check your bike. See if it has an Easton handlebar stem, specifically if it's one of 6,400 bikes with an EA30 stem. This recall from the Consumer Product Safety Commission and Easton Sports of Scotts Valley, California. The problem here is that the stem can crack and cause the rider to lose control, posing a risk of serious injury if the rider falls. Now, the company did receive a report of a stem breaking, causing a minor injury to the rider. Once again, this recall for the Easton EA30 handlebar stem. They're black with white and gray graphics, and they feature a 4-bolt stem face cap. EA30 is printed on the stem. And sometimes these recalls involve original equipment items, in other words, items that came on your bicycle when you purchased it, or they involve aftermarket items, meaning items that you bought later to add to your bike. In this case, both aftermarket and original equipment stems are included in this recall. So if you've got a bike or just a stem that you bought from August 2007 through August 2009, and it's got an Easton EA30 stem, stop using it immediately. Contact any authorized Easton Sports dealer for a free replacement, or contact Easton Sports directly, toll-free at 866-892-6059 between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday, or click the links in the show notes for the Fredcast, episode 139. The District of Columbia, wedged between Maryland and Virginia, is the nation's capital here in the United States, and there are a lot of bicycle commuters in D.C. Well, now, in an attempt to minimize conflicts between bikes and cars, D.C. has cordoned off a section of a particular bike lane on 15th Street from U Street south to Massachusetts Avenue so that only that portion of the roadway is restricted to bicycles. Now, 15th Street is a 4-lane street with a single lane of parking in most blocks, and the bike lane is closest to the curb, and cars are permitted to park in the second lane from the curb. Here, the bike lane is designed for southbound cyclists only, and car traffic on that portion of 15th Street is one-way only northbound. However, when cyclists head north, they share the right lane with cars. The way that this particular lane works is, while there are cars on the roadway and some cars are allowed to park next to the bike lane itself is cordoned off with sort of flexible vertical stanchions that indicate that only bikes are allowed in this lane. Great idea, great way to give bikes total right of way and keep them separated from cars, prevent accidents, prevent dooring, protect cars from merging into the bikes. I think it's a great idea. The only problem here is this lane doesn't extend that far. From U Street to Massachusetts Avenue is really only about 7/10 of a mile. And considering the fact that the District of Columbia has 43 miles of bike lanes and tens of thousands of cyclists using the streets every day, this is only going to make the tiniest bit of difference to bicycle commuters. But hopefully it will provide a model, and if cars and bikes are able to find a way to make this work, hopefully district planners will consider extending this to some of the other heavily traveled portions of District of Columbia. Meanwhile, on the other side of the country, in Boulder, Colorado, Iron Man legend and Iron Man Hall of Fame inductee Dave Scott is suing a 61-year-old driver whose car he collided with while riding his bike in May. According to a lawsuit that he filed in Boulder County District Court, Scott sustained bodily injuries and lots of medical expenses after he crashed his bike into Ramona Sands' BMW as she was making an illegal U-turn on May 16th of this year. Apparently, what happened was Scott was riding down the road behind this woman's BMW when she pulled all the way over to the right between two parked cars, seemingly parking her car, at which point she accelerated, started a U-turn directly in front of him, and even though Scott braked and tried to avoid the car, he crashed into the driver's side, leaving him with injuries and mounting medical expenses. For those of you who aren't familiar, Dave Scott began his triathlon career in 1976, and he won his first Ironman in 1980 and again in 82, 83, 84, 86, and 87, and he was inducted as the first inductee into the Ironman Hall of Fame in 1993. I will keep you posted as soon as we get more info on how this lawsuit proceeds. I will say, however, that this points out that even if you are an accomplished cyclist, an athlete like Dave Scott, you've always got to assume what my dad told me when I was learning how to drive. He said, you've got to assume that everybody else out there on the road is out there to hurt you. Now, when you're driving a car, you've got some protection. But like I tell my kids, when we're out riding our bikes, you have no protection on your bicycle. And so you've always got to assume that the person in front of you is going to do something irrational. And in this case, that's exactly what happened. That's why when we go by parked cars and we see movement inside the car, we assume the door's going to open. That's why in this case, seeing somebody pulling over, you never know what they're going to do. Always give them a wide berth. Obviously, there was probably no way for Dave to get out of this situation. But for those of you who are out there riding your bikes, you know what? Heed Dad's advice. Just always assume that other drivers, other users of the road are going to do something irrational and try to expect and anticipate and avoid their irrational actions. Hey, do you remember on the last episode of the Fredcast, I mentioned that there was a bike art event in San Diego that I recommended that you go to because it was going to be generating income for a great cause, Kimberly's Bikes for Kids. Well, according to Dan Gindling, president of Kimberly's Bikes for Kids and Kimberly's husband, quote, it was a great evening. People came to celebrate bike art, to celebrate Kimberly. We had great food, two barbershop quartets, a caricature artist, and of course, the stars of the evening, the bicycle art, which was all donated. I can't thank the artists enough for their donations. Well, the reason Dave is so excited is because the event brought in more than $14,000, which means that hundreds of underprivileged children will be pedaling brand new bikes thanks to the generosity of those art collectors who came out to the 2009 Bike Art Spectacular. The most expensive piece was a piece that was 6 feet by 3 feet. It was hand-painted aluminum. It was a wall sculpture by Israeli artist Dave Gerstein. It was called Tour de France, and it was sold to a New York collector for $6,600. The collector also bought the gallery-framed Leroy Neiman Indoor Cycling Limited Edition print for $2,575. According to the collector, quote, I am so pleased to be able to contribute to your wonderful and worthy cause. Now, for more information about the 2009 Bike Art Spectacular, or for more information on this very worthy charity established to honor Kimberly Caledonia, a talented and avid cyclist from San Diego who died of brain cancer in 2008, go to kimsbikes.org or just go to the show notes for episode 139. And finally in the news tonight, a great article from Bicycle Retailer about a mechanic whose sixth sense helped nab a bicycle thief. According to Bicycle Retailer, the instant Mike Mayevsky saw a man pushing a $12,000 Pinarello Prince signature edition into his bike shop, Revo Cycles, he had a hunch, and his hunch proved correct. According to the article, this guy walks into the store wearing board shorts, flip-flops, and no shirt, and he asks Mayevsky to put platform pedals on his $12,000 Pinarello Prince. Now, I don't know about you, but I can't think of any reason why you would want to put platform pedals on that bike. Personally, I'm going to want to have the lightest, most high-end pedals possible to match the bike that I'm riding. According to Mayevsky, telling Bicycle Retailer, quote, when he asked me to put on those pedals, I thought to myself, why would he want to do that? I then casually asked where he'd gotten the bike, and he told me he had just moved here from Arizona, and a friend had given it to him. Well, sensing something it was amiss, as I think many of us also would have sensed, as soon as the guy left the store, Mayevsky called Gita Sporting Goods. Now, that's the distributor for Pinarello in the United States, and asked the rep to look up the serial number, because being an astute guy, he had written down the serial number and taken a picture of the bicycle with his cell phone. Sure enough, they found out that this was a bike that had been stolen from a collector in Tucson, Arizona. This guy had come into the shop. He had purchased a Colnago Ferrari and a custom Independent Fabrications titanium mountain bike. Thieves had apparently cleaned out the guy's house, taking his bikes and everything else. Well, at this point, Mayevsky knew that he had probably seen a stolen bicycle, but he didn't know what to do about it because the guy was long gone. Inexplicably, the guy comes back a couple of days later saying he was having trouble pumping up the tires because he went to his local filling station and for some reason their pump couldn't fill up his tires. This guy had no idea about Presta valves or the difference between a Presta and a Schrader or even how to deal with the Presta valves on this bike. Mayevsky took the bike into the back and told the man that the compressor was down. It would take a couple of minutes, during which time he called the local police. And sure enough, the cops came back, confiscated the bike, and questioned the guy who had brought it in. According to John McDonald, a spokesman for the Orange County Sheriff's Department in California, they have the bike, they're looking into the matter, but no arrests have been made. Kudos to Bicycle Retailer for the article, and especially to Mike Mayevsky of Revo Cycles for being astute, keeping his eyes open, and doing the right thing. And that's going to do it for the news for this episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for November 15th, 2009. Now, before we move on, I want to thank this week's sponsor, Audible. Audible has more than 60,000 titles of audiobooks and other audio entertainment available for your downloading pleasure. And just because you're a listener to the Fredcast, they're going to give you 14 days and one free audiobook just for going to audiblepodcast.com/cycling. Now, every time that they're a sponsor, I try to give you one of my recommendations. And this week, well, if you're like me, you've been a Stephen King fan for years and years. Unfortunately, with some of the tomes that he's been coming out with lately, I just simply don't have the time to sit down and actually read over 1,000 pages of fiction. And in order to get through it, well, Audible is my savior. And right now, I'm reading the latest Stephen King novel called Under the Dome. Over 1,000 pages in print, unabridged on Audible at 34 and a half hours, and it's just one credit. This can be your free audiobook just for signing up. According to the summary from the publisher, on an entirely normal, beautiful day in Chester's Mill, Maine, the town is inexplicably and suddenly sealed off from the rest of the world by an invisible force field. Planes crash into it and fall from the sky in flaming wreckage. A gardener's hand is severed as the dome comes down on it. People running errands in the neighborhood town are divided from their families, and cars explode on impact. No one can fathom what this barrier is, where it came from, and when or if it will ever go away. It's typical Stephen King weaving a tale of an average, everyday American small town in an extraordinary, beyond average situation. It's called Under the Dome. It's by Stephen King. It's out now in hardback, or you can get it on Audible. Go to audiblepodcast.com/cycling. Sign up now. Get Under the Dome. Enjoy it. Enjoy your 14 free days of Audible. And even if you decide not to stick around, Under the Dome or any other Audible title is yours to keep. Thanks to Audible, and thanks to you for going to audiblepodcast.com/cycling, supporting our advertiser, someone who has supported us for so long. Also, a quick note, you remember last Fredcast, we talked to Rob Leipheimer from the Outdoorsman up in Montana. He was our bike shop of the month, or rather the Outdoorsman was our bike shop of the month. We're still looking for nominations every month for your favorite bike shop. Go to the show notes at www.thefredcast.com or just shoot an email to Rex. That's rex@thefredcast.com and let him know what bike shop you want to recommend and why. He'll do a little bit of magic, do some pre-interviews, and hopefully we'll be hearing your favorite bike shop as the next Fredcast Bike Shop of the Month. Well, last week my wife and I had the opportunity to view an encore presentation of the film Race Across the Sky, which is a documentary chronicling the experience of those who raced in the 2009 version of the Leadville Trail 100. If you're not familiar with the Leadville Trail 100, this takes place in Leadville, Colorado, an out-and-back course of 100 total miles. Leadville sits at 10,200 feet above sea level. So just starting and getting on your bike there, for those of you from sea level, and even those of us who live at 7,000 feet, 10,200 feet, there's a lot less oxygen, and it's difficult to ride there. Along the way, riders ride on about 90% or more dirt trails, single track, double track, and forest service roads, power line service roads. Along the way, they'll climb 14,000 feet and, again, 100 miles on a mountain bike. Now, a lot of us are roadies, and maybe we don't think about the fact that riding 100 miles on a mountain bike is quite a different thing from riding 100 miles on a road bike. Now, I've done shows and talked to you about preparing for your first century, and I can imagine, because I've done it many times now, what it's like to complete 100 miles on a road bike. Many of us will do that in 5 or 6, maybe 7 or 8 hours. Leadville, time cutoff is 12 hours. After that, you're basically considered a citizen on a mountain bike. But before that, those who finish in 9 hours get a silver and gold belt buckle, and those who finish in 12 hours or less get a silver belt buckle. And trust me, there's many people who will finish in just a couple of minutes past 12 hours, and they can't wait to go back and ride the next year to get that coveted belt buckle. Now, to race in Leadville, you have to make application, and they get so many applications, and after this movie, I can imagine they're going to get so many more, that it's a lottery, and there is no guarantee that you will get chosen to do Leadville. 6-time champion of Leadville, Dave Weens, who I knew when I was working for Tioga and sponsored the Diamondback mountain bike team. Dave Weens, his first year, he tells the story in the movie of how he applied and didn't get in, and then he made a phone call. He said, well, you know, I'm Dave Weens, and I'm a professional mountain bike racer, and I've won this, and I've won that. And they said, sorry, it doesn't work that way. Try the lottery again next year. Guys like Lance Armstrong, they have a special rule for him. Race organizers say that if you've won the Tour de France, you've got an automatic entry into the Leadville Trail 100. And in a panel discussion that took place after the initial screening of the movie, and which was taped and shown to viewers of last week's screening of the movie, Lance Armstrong said something like, well, I wish Alberto Contador would come here and race Leadville. What was really spectacular about this film is that it doesn't glamorize the Leadville Trail 100. It simply shows it as it is, a very difficult race, a very difficult test of human will and athleticism. And as the organizers say, if Leadville teaches you anything, it's that you are better than you think you are, and you can do more than you think you can. I watched this film with my friend Kendall and with my wife Donna, and I got to tell you, Donna, who was at one time an amateur cross-country mountain bike racer, Kendall and I, who we both play around with mountain bikes, we're definitely roadies. There were times when this movie got very emotional. The time when at one of the aid stations, they literally had to stop people because it had been more than 4 hours until they got to that aid station. At that point, they knew that they would not be able to make it up to the final climb and back, and they had to cut them out of the race. And the way that people got very emotional about that. This is not a story of just the professionals, not just about Dave Weens, not just about Lance Armstrong, who did win the 2009 edition of the Leadville Trail 100 after having been beaten the year before by Dave Weens. It's not just about the professionals, although they are certainly highlighted in this movie. This movie is about people like you and me, people who set a goal and who train to achieve that goal and who go out and have the pleasure and the blessings of being able to either achieve that goal or to be schooled by the trails and to have the will to want to come back again next year. A couple of standouts from the film, the woman who we talked about here on the Fredcast months ago, who was hit by a car and who in a very poignant moment, her husband said, all he wanted to do when he came upon the accident scene was to scoop her up and take her home and hope that she would be okay. About this woman who had the will and the desire to get back on her bicycle and who did indeed complete the Leadville Trail 100 before the time cutoff this year. A very emotional story. Something else that really stands out beyond the Lance Armstrong comment, which was hilarious about wanting Contador to come and race the Leadville Trail 100. Dave Weens, again, the six-time champion, who was trailing Lance Armstrong at the turnaround point at the top of a very difficult climb, came around that turnaround point, and there's a number of volunteers there manning an aid station where most competitors like us would stop, get some food, some water, but where the professionals just simply used it as a turnaround to keep going. As Dave Weens goes through there, and as he's leaving, he stops, he pauses, he turns around, and he thanks the volunteers for being there. It was just a great moment because it shows what Leadville is about. You know, at one point, like Park City where I live, Leadville was a mining town, a town where it was boom and sudden bust, where, as they said in the movie, a town of 5,000 people, and one day 3,200 of those people found themselves out of a job. They needed to figure out what they were going to do in this small mining town. And one of the things was doing a race like the Leadville Trail 100, which is done on mountain bikes. And then the following weekend is also done as a running event. So there's a lot of emotional attachment to this, not just the accomplishment of completing the event, which you certainly see in the movie, but also the way that events like this and the way tourism have really reinvigorated a town that very likely could have become a ghost town after all of those layoffs. I suppose if there were funny moments from the movie, one of them would be the fact that Lance Armstrong simply does not know how to change a flat tire. At least that's the way it appeared. Lance was riding tubeless tires, and he obviously had a leak toward the end of the race, and his tire was low. He pulled out a CO2 cartridge, tried to fill it up, but unfortunately the tire kept continuing to lose air. Now, it's a little tough on a tubeless tire because there's not much to change, so you either make a repair or, as Lance did, finish the race on a flat tire and win on a flat tire. A lot of people have pointed out, however, that Lance did chuck the CO2 cartridge to the side of the trail. Hopefully a fan or the moto driver or somebody else picked it up so it's not sitting there as refuse and litter sitting along the side of the road. The other thing that was really funny was there was a guy from Colorado who was shown throughout the movie. He said he was still riding the same bike that he got in the, I think it was the late 80s or early 90s, and still using his old, what did he call it, ping pong ball style helmet from back then. And you could also see him throughout the race when the rain was coming down, wearing full rain suit like you would see a police officer wearing in the middle of the street. So, you know, and that really points out what this movie does. It shows you the pros and it shows you the amateurs. It shows you everything in between. And it's really, really enjoyable. I don't know yet whether there will be another encore performance. I suspect that you'll soon be able to buy the DVD. I also suspect that this movie did for a lot of others what it did for me and for Kendall, and that is inspire a desire within us to go to Leadville in 2010. You can expect my entry to be in the lottery this year. Hopefully I'll get in, and hopefully I'll finish. I'll let you know. Well, for those of you who are wondering, the Leadville Trail 100 mountain bike race takes place August 14th, 2010, and those applications do need to be in sometime in December. Check the website. I've got links in the show notes to where you can follow both Race Across the Sky and the Leadville Trail 100, especially if you're thinking about applying for 2010. Well, the following weekend, August 21st, 2010, is going to be the start of this year's Fredcast Tour of the French Alps. I am really looking forward to this. We've got an amazing, just fantastic route. We've got some fantastic hotels lined up, and we've got a special surprise, somebody who's coming along with us this year. And I had an opportunity to speak with our tour director, and also with that special guest just a couple of days ago. So here is the official announcement of this year's Fredcast Tour of the French Alps, August 21st through the 28th, 2010. And here's my interview with the principals involved. And don't forget, stay tuned after this interview. I still have two product reviews for you this week. I am so pleased to welcome back to the Fredcast Jennifer Sage. Jennifer's from Viva Travels. You may remember we talked to Jennifer last year when we were planning this amazing tour of the French Alps. And I don't think that it surprises anybody that the economy hit and a lot of folks just simply couldn't spend the money on a vacation. So we decided to reschedule for 2010. I think it's bigger and better. Jennifer, welcome back to the Fredcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. All right. This year's tour, I mean, you and I went over the route when we were together earlier this week. We looked at the map. Just talk about some of the highlights and what makes this year's tour so spectacular.
Well, we are going to get a taste of the most famous, the most well-known, and really the most exciting cols in France. You know, the Tour de France, the ones everyone thinks of when they think of the Tour de France. We're going to start up on the Lac d'Annecy, so the Lake of Annecy, and get a chance to swim in the lake after a nice, long, hard ride. And then we're just going to follow a route that takes us south, over and down, up and over. Anything that crosses our path, we'll be stopping in Albertville for one night. We'll stop in Valoir, which is right beneath the Galibier. We'll go over that the next day. We're going to end up in Les Deux Alpes. We're going to stay there two nights, and we're going to finish with Alpe d'Huez. So, and then after Alpe d'Huez, we're going to head down and ride all the way to our hotel just outside of Grenoble and finish with just a huge bang.
Give everybody the dates for the tour for this year.
August 21st to 28th is an eight-day tour next summer. So we're giving you a chance to start training now. Put this on your calendar and start saving up.
Now, you mentioned a couple of cities there, and I just want to expand on those a little bit. So Lake Annecy is perhaps one of the most beautiful places on Earth. It is a crystal clear alpine lake with the most gorgeous little town. They call it, I think, the Venice of France, right?
Yep, Annecy is.
It is just beautiful. And we're staying someplace unique, aren't we?
We are staying at the Abbaye de Talloir. It's a four-star luxury hotel right on the lake, about 12 kilometers south of Annecy itself. And I've stayed there before. It's really, really fantastic. You're just going
to
love it.
And from there, we go to Albertville, the home of the Winter Olympics. From Albertville to Valoir, and you said, you glossed over this, right at the base of the Galibier, again, a cute little alpine town at the base of a massive climb.
Yep. No one will forget that climb for as long as they live. But the beautiful thing about the Galibier is it's followed with 40 kilometers of downhill.
So that definitely makes the climb worthwhile. And it is so beautiful looking at the glaciers. And I know, for me, at the Galibier, literally going around every turn, the view got more beautiful.
Yep.
It really is gorgeous.
And you get up to the top and you see the other side.
Yeah.
And it just takes your breath away.
And that's where there's a monument, isn't there? Just over the other side, a monument to the founder of the Tour de France, right?
Henri Desgrange. Mm-hmm. Yep. Everyone's going to want to stop and take a picture there.
And then we go to Les Deux Alpes, and we get to go a few days later and ride perhaps the most famous of all Tour de France climbs, the Alpe d'Huez.
It won't be the hardest, but it is the most famous. And, coming at the end of, it'll be our seventh day of climbing, it'll be the adrenaline that gets you up that one.
Now, in addition to the adrenaline, I think there's a little secret that we've been hiding from everybody. Some way that we might be able to motivate people to get up these climbs, a way to really personalize some of these climbs. And Jennifer, why don't you reveal the secret about who's coming with us this year?
Well, the exciting news is that we get to go on this trip with someone very special, someone who knows these climbs, better than we could ever dream of knowing them. And that person is Tyler Hamilton.
And so for those who may not know Tyler Hamilton, who's on the phone, we'll get to you in a second, Tyler. Tyler Hamilton is a longtime professional cyclist. We've talked about him here on the show before. He's now retired, and he's started actually a coaching business, which we will also talk about. Tyler, I think you're probably best known for, Olympic gold medal, winning Liège-Bastogne-Liège. And then tell us about the 2003 Tour. I know you told us earlier, maybe not your most shining moment, but certainly something that people respect you for. Why is that?
Well, first of all, I would like to thank you for having me on the show. I'm really excited to attend this trip next August. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and the people that come along are going to have an amazing time, that's for sure. The 2003 Tour was a brutal one for me. It was a roller coaster ride, so to speak. I had the form of my life, and unfortunately, I broke my collarbone in the in stage number one in a mass pileup there at the finish line. And, I made the decision after getting the x-rays that I was going to at least try and start the next day, and really just took it one kilometer at a time. And next thing I know, I was, winning a stage and then on to Paris, finishing fourth overall. Roller coaster ride, but it was something that I'll remember for the rest of my life.
And I think that's why people respect you. I mean, I think anybody who's ridden a bike for any length of time has unfortunately had a crash and has had an injury. And I know for myself, whether it was when I had to get stitches in my leg or when I've broken a bone, I'm off the bike because it's just kind of what you think about doing. How'd you keep going? What was your motivation with a broken collarbone, kind of an important piece of your body, if you will? What was your motivation?
Well, I mean, motivation was, I was ready to contend for to be on the podium in the Tour de France, and I felt like I trained so hard for that moment, and all those years of sacrifice, and I felt like I owed it to my team, I owed it to the staff, I owed it to my family, to at least try. And really put my mind over the matter and just kept plugging away. And did I think I'd be able to finish after seeing the X-ray? No, but I just put it, again, 1 kilometer at a time. And it's amazing the power of your mind.
Last night I saw the movie Race Across the Sky, and they were talking about the Leadville 100, and one of the messages that comes through is that and from the promoter of that race is you're better than you think you are. You can achieve more than you think you can. And I think that that's a really great example of it. Tell us, Tyler, when it comes to some of these climbs we're going to be doing, any particular Coles that come to mind as being the ones that are the most memorable for you?
Obviously, Opto Wes is a special climb. I've done it many, many times. Probably my best memory, a couple favorite memories. The first one was in 1999, helping set a tempo for Lance Armstrong. Going up that climb, it was, at the time, U.S. Postal Service, we were the sort of bad news bears of cycling, not an unestablished team, and they knew Lance was strong, but they didn't believe the team around him to support him. So there was a lot of motivation for me on that day, and Lance went on to win that tour that year. Another time was like actually in 2003, riding up that climb with my collarbone, and special climb, and I think all the people that come along will really enjoy it.
And it's very popular. I know when I was there a couple of years ago, just the sheer number of people attempting the climb on the day that we did it, a lot of Dutch were on that climb. And I was shocked because here we were on these high-end road bikes. And there were a lot of people just on beater bikes who just wanted to go to the top of that climb. So I think you're right. I think it's going to be really memorable.
Yeah. Some other climbs that are, stick out are the Col de Glibier. Mm-hmm. Fantastic climb. Beautiful. Very long, but every kilometer has a different view, and just it's something that everybody will remember. Certainly spent my time suffering on that climb over the years in the Tour de France, but everybody can go their own pace. It's a long one. Everybody just goes their own pace, and they'll really enjoy it. The Col de Madeleine also is a fantastic climb.
And both of them long and both of them difficult. And Jennifer, that brings up a great question that I think I've been asked when it comes to our tours more often than not. And that is, can I do this? And what happens if on a day I look up the hill and I say, you know what, I just don't want to ride? What's your philosophy when it comes to those things?
Well, I love what you just said about the Leadville 100. I mean, I think everyone can do more than they think they can. However, we are always prepared. We will have van support. No one has to do anything. And one thing that I love to do on my tours is give options. So on transfer days, obviously, we have to get from point A to point B. The van is always an option. But there are some other times where you can decide not to go up that one. There's a couple that are just up and backs, like the Col de la Colombière. We're going to ride up it and then come back down and then go up and over the Col de la Coiffure. So we have options. If someone wants to go to really go for it, they'll do it from start to finish. Other people can, take the slightly easier, nothing about this tour is easy, but perhaps, the slightly easier route by bypassing one col. So, we're going to motivate everyone as much as we can. We're going to help them prepare, help them train. But if it gets down to it on that day and you just can't make it up, no one really cares. You can jump in the van.
Now, you and Tyler have also talked about, because Tyler, you've got a new training business. So I think you guys were talking about providing some training plans for the attendees, right?
We've decided that I'm going to send a training program out to all the riders attending, a 3-month training program. This spring, that they'll be able to really focus on working on their climbing legs and obviously getting a lot stronger in preparation for this event.
So tell us a little bit about your business. We know you've retired. What is it that you're doing now?
Yeah, a lot of people after I retired, a lot of people started calling me asking for training tips and training advice. And I had over the years coached a few people just on the side, just for fun, some friends and some teammates. And I just came to the conclusion that, why don't I try this? And next thing I know, I've been really busy on a daily basis with coaching. And it's been a lot of fun, really enjoying seeing the improvements and seeing the just working with all different ages and abilities.
And if people want to contact you about your coaching, how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, they can go to my website, tylerhamiltontraining.com. Right now there's just information on how to contact me through there, email and phone number. The official website will be coming up in the next few weeks. So thanks for asking.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? I got to address this because, you know, if anybody who's listened to my show for any length of time, there's kind of this elephant in the room. And that is, you know what, Tyler, everybody knows that your career's had its ups and downs and accusations and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so people are going to say, hey, David, you know, you've talked about doping on your show. And how do you jibe, you know, going with Tyler and bringing Tyler on your trip? And I just want to say, for me, I look at what you've done as far as bringing awareness to folks who have depression. I mean, I've certainly seen that in my own family and among my own friends, and so I respect that. But more than that, I know what you've done with the Tyler Hamilton Foundation and what you've done for raising awareness for MS and raising money for MS. And somebody like myself who has MS and has to, I mean, I don't have it, but I have to deal with it every day in my family. My wife has MS, as everybody knows. I respect what you've done there. And anybody that I've known who's known you, who's been involved with your foundation or your MS Global rides, they've all said that you're passionate about that. And so between your experience in riding these climbs, your experience as a coach, and what you've been doing for MS, that's what attracted me when Jennifer called me and said, hey, Tyler wants to come on this trip. It was those things that I thought of and not those ups and downs that we talked about in your career. So I just wanted to make that clear to everybody. I respect Tyler for those things. And the rest, you know what? Tyler's retired and he's moved on. Is that pretty much your thought as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there's no point in rehashing some stuff in the past. But one thing real quick about you're speaking about my support of people with MS. Mm. And my marquee event with my foundation is called MS Global. And one year we did quite a few of these climbs. The one that sticks out is the Col de Glibier, which is, I believe, will be the highest point there on this trip. And it's a brutal climb, and for those people out there who don't believe that they can do a trip like this. There were plenty of people on this MS Global trip 5 years ago who had MS, who did this, who did the whole trip, all these climbs. And, you know, it should be inspiring to everyone out there that, you know, you can do it. You can do these climbs. Just everybody can go their own pace. There's no time limit on any of these days. Just go out and enjoy and just put, you know, one foot in front of the other, so to speak.
And it's a great point. My friend Michael, who has MS, was on that trip. And I just remember the feeling of accomplishment for finishing some of these climbs. So you're absolutely right. Jennifer, but for those people who are hammerheads, you told me the other night, tell us how much climbing there is. If you decide to do every length, every option for the most difficult portions of this trip, and remember, as you said earlier, you do have lots of options. But if you go and you do every foot of elevation, what are we talking about?
We're talking 33,000 feet of climbing.
Just let that sit there for a second.
Yeah. less, obviously, if you don't, you know,
sure,
choose all the climbs or take the van. The daily mileage is really not overwhelming. Mm-hmm. You know, 40 to 80 miles a day. So with options to shorten or lengthen it.
And so the dates again, August 21st through the 28th, we're going to be starting in Geneva, where people will be met by your staff and then brought to our first hotel near Lake Annecy. And then we'll be departing from Grenoble. Easy to get back to Geneva from there, to Lyon or to any of the other airports. Give everybody some of the details. What's included? You know, the all-important question, how much does it cost and how can they get more information?
Well, we worked hard on making this cost, the cost of this tour, reasonable. And for reference, I'm just going to tell you real quick, 10 years ago, I led a bicycle tour with Greg LeMond to the tour. It was an 8-day tour. It was $12,000 a person to go to that tour. We have managed to keep this tour reasonable. We really do believe that we have opportunities that you just cannot find elsewhere. Tyler's going to be with you all day. riding with you, sitting with you at lunch, at breakfast, at dinner. He's going to give some talks in the evening, you know, some climbing skills, maybe some more stories about the faux peloton or the tour or the Olympics or whatever. So we'll really have a chance to experience what very few people have. And for that, I really think it's a reasonable price of $58.95, so less than $6,000. However, we're going to give a discount of $300 if people sign up by December 15th. And then the other thing that I've done with this tour is that I've included, you know, I've been leading tours for a very long time, and a lot of times they'll take out meals to keep the price down. Well, we've got every meal is included, every breakfast, every evening meal. Lunches are a little harder to include because we could be anywhere and, you know, with this many people at a restaurant. But we will have a huge, amazing picnic planned. So all the dinners are included and breakfast, obviously incredible accommodations. We start off in the luxury hotel on Talwar, and we finish off with the luxury hotel, the Chateau de la Commanderie, just outside of Grenoble. The other hotels along the way are very nice three-star hotels. And obviously we're going to have the vans are going to be well-stocked. We're going to have bilingual guides and mechanic. And, you know, I have a itinerary that's going to be posted on my website that will have an entire list of everything that is included. And then we can also help out with travel arrangements, with flights, with train or hotels if people want to stay longer and or come earlier.
Now, what about people? I mean, I'm bringing my bike, but some people might want to not have the hassle of bringing their bike. What sort of accommodations can we make for them?
Well, I do have access to a limited number of really nice bikes. We have two levels, a standard road bike, and I believe they use Cannondales. Last year they had a couple different varieties. I'll have to check on that, but this company takes really good care of their bikes. They now have some titanium higher level road bikes with nicer components. So we have the option of two different levels of bikes, and that will also be listed on the itinerary. Those, like I said, will be limited, so it'll be first come, first serve.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be bringing my own bike, as I'm sure you will too, Tyler, right?
Oh, yeah. I'll be ready.
And there's
something about having your own bike on a climb like this, you know, on these kind of climbs and descents. But, again, these are good quality bikes, so it does save a little bit of a hassle.
Absolutely. And for those, though, who do bring their bikes, obviously we're going to have bike carriers or boxes, and those will be transported from our start to from our initial hotel to our final evening's hotel, all by Viva Travels.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Well, Jennifer, Tyler, I don't know about you guys, but I wish August would come already. This is going to be a really great trip. Again, limited number of spots. For those of you that are interested in signing up, you're going to want to go to Jennifer's website. Give the URL, please, Jennifer.
It is www.vivatravels.com. That's V-I-V-A travels with an S.com.
And for those of you who want to get an early start on your training, Tyler, give them that website one more time.
It's TylerHamiltonTraining.com.
And guys, if you don't mind, what I would love to do is come back again in a couple of weeks, and maybe over the next few months, we'll highlight each of these individual climbs and the locations where we're going to be starting and finishing, the towns we'll be going through, just giving people a nice taste of what the tour is going to be like so that we'll sort of whet their appetite for coming with us. How does that sound?
That sounds great.
Excellent. Well, Jennifer, Tyler, thank you so much for joining us today. Looking forward to riding with you guys. And for those of you who are interested, again, www.vivatravels.com, or just go to thefredcast.com, and I'll have a link right there on the site. So there you go. It's our 2010 Fredcast tour of the French Alps. It's going to be an amazing trip. Really looking forward to it and getting the perspective not only of a very experienced travel guide in Jennifer Sage from Viva Travels, but also from a Tour de France veteran, an Olympic champion, from Tyler Hamilton. So it's going to be a great trip, a lot of fun. Hope you'll join us. Again, go to thefredcast.com for links, or go to vivatravels.com. And now, before we get into our product reviews. I've got two of them for you today, both very Freddy, by the way. Wanted to ask you a question and something I was hoping that you'd be able to get back to me very quickly with, either with an email or preferably with your audio comments. You can send those in an email to thefredcast@gmail.com. And I've got a question for you. I know in my local community, whether it was in Southern California or actually in Utah, there's a lot of running events on Thanksgiving. They call them turkey trots. And one thing that's always bothered me is I'm not really a runner, is what do cyclists do on Thanksgiving? Are there comparable events on Thanksgiving to turkey trots for cyclists? And so here's my question. If there is an event in your local area, let us know about it. Send an email, send a voicemail, put turkey trot in your subject line and let me know, and I'll do a show next week and I'll put it out there so everybody knows what they can be doing in their local communities as a cyclist on Thanksgiving. I eat a lot on Thanksgiving. Doing a little bit of extra exercise is a great way to counteract the effects of the turkey and the tryptophan and the stuffing and everything else that goes into it. So let us know. For those of you in the United States, is there a comparable event to a turkey trot in your neck of the woods for cyclists? That's thefredcast@gmail.com. Well, as all of you know, I'm kind of a stickler when it comes to safety. I talk about helmets all the time. I talk about being a good cycling citizen and just being safe out there on the road. And one of the things that makes you safe is knowing what's going on around you. And if you're like me and you do a lot of your riding by yourself, it can be difficult to keep that situational awareness at all times. I remember when I was a little kid, my grandmother used to say, driving around Los Angeles, you know, to drive in this town, you have to have eyes in the back of your head. And, you know, wanting to respect my elders, I didn't have the heart to say, Grandma, you've got a rearview mirror. You do have eyes in the back of your head. Well, as cyclists, we have some options when it comes to rearview mirrors. We've seen the rearview mirror that will come off on a little post off the side of your glasses and stick out in front of you, and you can just sort of glance up at it. We've seen the ones that go on your bar ends, on the bottom of your drop bars, so that you can just sort of glance down and see what's going on behind you. And I'm going to be honest with you, all right? As much of a stickler for safety as I am, I kind of consider those really dweeby. I'm sorry. I know a lot of you use them. I apologize to you. But I don't know. They just never suited my... I guess, you know, I'm kind of a poser. That's sort of the definition of a Fred, right? I guess it just never suited the way I dress or the bike that I ride, and I guess that makes me a bit of an elitist, so I apologize for that. But at Interbike, our producer Rex walked up to me and he handed me a little cardboard package that said third eye mirror, on lens micro mirror. And he said, you know what, I picked this up. I thought this might be something that you'd like to try. And I let it sit there on my desk after Interbike for quite some time thinking, I don't know, is that something I really want to try? But I decided, look, Rex got it for me. I'm going to try it. Whether I like it or not, I'm going to let you know my feelings about it. And I got to tell you, within the first 5 minutes of using this mirror, I got hooked. And I really can't imagine now riding without it. Let me describe it to you. So this is the third eye on lens micro mirror. And it mounts actually on the inside of your lens of your glasses, and you put it as far out to the edge of your lenses as possible so that it doesn't obstruct your vision in front. And all you do is you sort of glance over, at least here in the US, you glance over to the left, and you're looking into this mirror. And according to the folks who make this mirror, it gives you the same viewing error area as your rearview mirror in your car. And I got to tell you, I can't exactly say that from my perspective, it gives me the same viewing area because, again, you're only looking at it in one eye, whereas if you look at your rearview mirror, you're looking at it in both eyes. But it gives you a great indication of what's going on behind you. And I have now found this to be invaluable, and I'm planning to ride with this every time I go riding. It's really tiny. It's just a couple of millimeters across. It comes with some glue dots, and all you do to put this thing on is you cover one eye, so you cover your inside eye. So for those of you here in the U.S. where we ride on the right-hand side of the road, you cover your right eye. For those of you in the U.K. or other places where you drive on the wrong side of the road, you'd cover your left eye, and then you look out as far as you can and still get sharp vision. And then you point your index finger toward the corner of your eye and touch the inside of your glasses and note that spot where you were able to get vision. Then you put a glue dot down and then you on the mirror itself, and then you put the mirror right down on that spot. And then what's cool is the mirror actually adjusts. It's got a little ball and socket in there so that you can move it around so that you get the best vision possible. Now, when I first put it on my glasses, I put a little bit too far under the inside, so closer to my nose than to my ear, and I found that I had to cock my head a little bit in order to look past my shoulder. Once I was able to reposition it, and thankfully they give you more than one of these little glue dots, once I was able to reposition it and put it farther out on the outside, really it was just a matter of looking to the left and being able to look into that mirror and see what's behind me. This is a great product. I've got a link in the show notes where you can buy this on Amazon. And remember, if you do click that link, you're going to get the same price you would normally, but I'm going to get a couple of pennies from it. So I would appreciate it if you did that. It's in the show notes. It's about $10, a little bit less than $10 on Amazon. It takes up virtually no space on your glasses. And I think that once you try it, you're going to be like me. You're going to get hooked. This is the third eye mirror, the on-lens micro mirror. It fits inside your sunglasses. It's less than $10 on Amazon.com. Go ahead and check it out in the show notes at www.thefredcast.com. And finally, one more product review for today, and this is another Freddy kind of a product. This is the Rido Saddle, R-I-D-O. Think about your bike and think about the contact points on your bike between your bike and your body. Of course, there's your handlebars. That's one contact point. There's your pedals. That's the second contact point. And then there's your saddle. That's your third contact point. And if you think about it, many of us have spent a lot of money on getting our hands very comfortable, be it with high-end gloves or if you're on a mountain bike, high-end mountain bike handlebar grips. If you're on your road bike, it could be an expensive handlebar or a combination of handlebar and bar tape. It could be your brake hoods. So there could be a lot of ways that you're really trying to customize that contact point and make it more comfortable. And similarly, with your pedals, with your shoes, or maybe even with the orthotics or inserts that you put into your shoes or your socks. And of course, let's not forget the pedals and cleats themselves. A lot of us spend a lot of money on our pedals and on our cleats. But if you think about where you're putting a lot of weight for a long period of time and where you've got the most contact going on, it's your gluteus maximus, it's your rear end and the saddle. And you know, the basic design of a bicycle saddle really hasn't changed that much. And there have been a lot of different companies that have come out with saddles that are supposed to make sure that you're not compromising performance, but also making sure that you're getting more comfort and that you're not causing any damage, nerve damage, numbness, or any of those other issues that come from riding a bike. You may recall a few years ago, there was that famous article in Bicycling Magazine, famous and controversial article, about how cycling can cause impotence in men. And as a result of that, there was a variety of different initiatives by a variety of different companies to come out with saddles that were more anatomic, more ergonomic. Some of them had a nose that was cut off. And personally, I didn't find that very comfortable because you kind of need the nose of your saddle to help control your bike. At least I do. A lot of them had cutouts in the middle. Lots of different designs. And I think if you're like me, you probably tried several of them. Well, a company in Great Britain called Rido, R-I-D-O, sent me a sample of their latest model, the Rido R2. I got to be honest with you. When I opened up the box, I was really skeptical when I looked at this product. Talk about a Freddy product. This doesn't look overall like the saddle that you're used to. Yes, it's a Y shape, but the ends of the Y, the two ends of the Y, that where your sit bones go, are more pronounced. They're raised higher. There's like two little pillows on there, if you will. And it just looks a little bit different. And I was a little bit skeptical about how it was going to feel and honestly, how it was going to look on my bike. By the way, have you noticed that tonight's show is all about how I look on my bike? I didn't realize that I was quite that vain. Anyway, I'm actually riding a test bike right now. The Land Rover Orbea folks sent me along a team issue Orbea Orca. And so It came without a saddle because the racer who was using the bike before took his saddle with him. And so this was the perfect spot for me to try out the Rido saddle. Now, one of the things that makes this the perfect vehicle on which to test this saddle is that this is a stiff bike. I'll talk about it again in a couple of shows. This is a stiff bike. It's all carbon fiber, but very, very stiff. It feels a lot like riding an old steel bike, except for the fact that it's got the lightness of carbon fiber. And man, this bike is quick, but we'll talk about that again in the future. But because it's so stiff, you literally feel a lot of the road. The road is transferred up the frame right into your body. And so this was a perfect place for me to try out the Rido saddle. Now, normally, where I normally ride, I have a lot of standing, a lot of changes in my body as I contact the saddle. But where I'm using this bike right now is at work, where it's mostly flat. And so I'm doing a lot of sitting, not a whole lot of standing. And this is a perfect opportunity for me to test whether or not I'm going to feel any numbness or any pain and how this saddle feels as compared to other saddles. Now, normally I ride a Sella Italia flight saddle, and so that'll give you an idea of what I'm normally riding. And what I found with the Rido, they've got something that they call PSG, pressure shift geometry. And simply all that means is that they have changed where the pressure points are on the saddle. Now, we've all heard for years that what you want to do for your best comfort and the best positioning is you want to take your sit bones. You can reach back behind you right now as I'm doing. You can feel where your sit bones are, and that's what you want to put right onto that rear portion of the saddle. Well, the Rido saddle, because of its unique design, automatically positions your sit bones right where they need to be, thereby taking the pressure off the perineum area on both men and women. And I got to tell you, on these lunchtime rides that I've been taking, I've definitely been more comfortable. And that's only part of it. The other thing that they do is if you turn the saddle over and you look underneath, you can see the actual structure of the saddle. First of all, the rails are in exact same place as they would be on any other saddle, so it's going to fit on your seat post. But it's also got what they call a monocoque sculpture underneath. And really all that means is it looks like a skeleton of a saddle, so that there's softness where you need it, stiffness where you need it, and it's making sure that it's not giving you extra flexibility, but it's making sure that you're not getting any pressure points where you shouldn't have them. So again, personally, I found this really comfortable out on just a regular ride, and it does not look unusual on this high-end bike. Remember, we talked earlier about the guy who took his Pinarello Prince into a bike shop and wanted to put platform pedals on. I'm going to be honest, I was a little worried that the Rido was going to look like platform pedals on a Pinarello Prince, but, and I love that alliteration, but it actually looks just fine on the bike. It looks great, and it is really comfortable. Now, here's where I found that it's the most comfortable and where it's already making a huge difference for me. The snow has started falling in Park City, and that means that I've brought my bike in and put it on my CompuTrainer. And so I'm sitting there grinding out the miles, watching my Erg videos, watching TV, listening to my iPod, just not moving. And I've always found that when I'm stationary cycling, especially when I'm grinding out those miles and doing those hard workouts on my CompuTrainer, that's where I've found that I've had perineal discomfort, numbness, all those issues that we've heard about, that we've, I think, from time one time or another, we've all experienced, and I find that I have most problems when I'm working out indoors. This is where the Rido R2 is working the best for me, and I'd recommend it to those of you who are grinding out the miles, whether indoors or out, but especially indoors. At least for me, I found that this has solved my problems of discomfort indoor cycling. Now, for those of you who are wondering, unlike other saddles on the market, the Rido is universal fit, so it's going to fit men and women, and it is a one-size-fits-all design. Also, unlike a lot of other saddles that I've tried, Rido recommends that when you initially set up your saddle, you set it up dead flat, horizontal, parallel to the ground. I found that that's very comfortable, but they say just the slightest nose up or nose down can really make a big difference for you. So when you put one on your bike, don't make huge changes when you first put it on. Try it horizontal, ride for a few dozen miles, then come back and only make the slightest changes up or down, nose up or down, and you'll notice a huge difference in your comfort. The Rido comes in a variety of different colors, all black, tan and beige, black and lemon, purple and white, or the original black, and yellow. I'm riding the all-black version, although I think the black and yellow one would look really cool. On the Ride-O Saddles website, it's listed as 29.99 pounds. That's about 50 U.S. dollars. And I will put links in the show notes where you can find Ride-O Saddles website. It's definitely a product that I like. It's no heavier than an existing regular saddle. It looks great on the bike. It feels really good. Guaranteed, if you see any pictures of my CompuTrainer setup this year, you're going to find that Ride-O saddle atop my bike. Go ahead and check them out. They're at Ride-O, R-I-D-O, dash, Cycle Saddles, CycleSaddles.com. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. I want to thank our sponsors, Audible. Go to audiblepodcast.com/cycling to sign up for your free 14-day trial of the Listener Gold Program and get that free book. Try that Stephen King book. I think that's a great deal for free, and you get to keep it whether or not you decide to be an Audible member or not. I also want to thank you for your donations and for using the links at www.thefredcast.com, whether it's at Amazon or Performance Bike or iTunes or wherever else. You're going to get the same deals you would get anyway, but I'm going to get a couple of pennies back, and that's going to help support the Fredcast. So thank you so much for that. Remember, if you want to contact me, you can use the email address. It's thefredcast@gmail.com. And for simplicity, to follow along with everything I'm doing and everywhere I'm going, check my Twitter feed. It's twitter.com/Fredcast. But before we go, as we do every week, it's time for some PodSafe cycling music. Tonight's music comes to us, as it always does, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.mevio.com. Tonight's music is by a band called the Front Street Projects, and it's called, appropriately so, Nighty Night. So Nighty Night from the Fredcast and from the Front Street Project. We'll be back with another show very, very soon. But between this show and the next, enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.
When I wake up wrapped up in your arms, there's only one thing that I'm sure of. It's when you're here right here and I'm gone. No, our love will still move on. Well, it still moves on. So when you find that fight you can't win, well, I'll be here when you give in. What you want may not be us, love, but I will always love you just 'cause. Well, I know that you still love me too. So I say, night, 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 night. Close your eyes and I'll hold you tight. I'll turn out the light and I'll say goodnight, night, 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 night. Fall back on times that once were yours or mine, I can't be sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. When our two dreams will come together and our two paths make one forever. Well, I know that you still love me too. I say, night, 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 night. Close your eyes and I'll hold you tight. I'll turn out the light when I say goodnight, night, 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 night. Night, 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 night. close your eyes and I'll hold you tight. Yeah, turn out the light when I say goodnight. Night, nighty night. Close your eyes and I'll hold you tight.